Good morning, or good evening, or good afternoon on this rotating globe, a gem in space. Welcome to the other side of midnight, that magical time between dusk and dawn, when we find ourselves often in another state of consciousness, willing to consider revolutionary ideas that challenge our everyday thought patterns and expand our awareness to new possibilities. Tonight is such a night. I first heard of our guest on a YouTube video from the Global Breakthrough Energy Movement of 2012. And before I go on, I just want to mention, dear friends, that Richard is not feeling well. So this is Cynthia, and I will be hosting the show. He may pop on if he feels better. So everybody send him good energy. And send Richard some love. So anyway, back to our guest. Tonight's show is the Zimbabwe Ruins at 19.5, connecting the dots from our stunning ancient past to the insane modern world we have created. Tonight, we're going to explore the convergence of science, spirituality, and consciousness. Our guest, Michael Tillinger, is an author, scientist, explorer, and humanitarian who has become a real-life Indiana Jones, making groundbreaking discoveries about advanced civilizations at the southern tip of Africa. His continued analytic scientific approach has produced stunning new evidence that will force us to rethink our origins and rewrite our history books. Michael is the founder of the Global Ubuntu Liberation Movement of Higher Consciousness with members in over 140 countries. Michael exposed a vanished civilization at the southern tip of Africa that left behind more than 10 million stone ruins. These ruins are not dwellings, but energy-generating devices, and are most likely the work of the Anunnaki and their gold mining activity in this part of the world. His major contribution to this research, this area of research, was his discovery of the tools and artifacts that support his scientific findings. And most recently, in January of 2018, countless mud fossils of large beings and animals that do not fit any known descriptions today. Michael, welcome to the other side of midnight.
Thank you very much, Cynthia. Great to be speaking to you. I'm really sorry that Richard is sick, but it's equally nice to hear your voice.
Thank you. Thank you. So I'm so excited to explore with you this topic. I mean, it was totally new for me when I watched your presentation. Folks, if you'd like to follow along, you will go to the show, the 19.5 Zimbabwe Ruins at 19.5 on theothersideofmidnight.com. Click on the graphic for that show and it will take you to the show page and scroll down and you will see Michael's items there. So, Michael, before we get started and get deeply into your items, I really would like to explore with you, what brought you to this work? What's the journey? How did you land up in this amazing work?
Well, I guess we all have our story and our trigger points. I see our journeys directed and driven by trigger points in our lives, you know, often, I suppose, controlled or managed or subconsciously managed by our passions and our things that we attracted to. And I recall in high school, even before high school, in primary school, I always used to look up at the sky and wonder, you know, I wonder what's going on up there. You know, who really knows what's going on up there? And yeah. And just wondering, are there other people up there that live up there? Why don't they come visit us? And those kind of thoughts, you know. And then in high school, in biology class, I think I was 14 years old, and we were going through normal biology class, and at one point we're learning about cells, how human cells regenerate, and that we create billions of new cells every day, and at that point I realized, hold on, if our bodies are capable of creating new cells every day, why do we die if our cells are reborn all the time? And I think it was a very valid question for a 14-year-old. And I asked the biology teacher, so if we keep creating new cells, why do we eventually stop creating cells and why do we die? Why don't that just carry on and we carry on creating new cells and carry on living? And the answer that I was given by my biology teacher, shame, poor woman, probably had no clue how to answer that question. But she said, well, that's just the way it is. And I went, okay, well, that's not an answer. That means that we don't know anything about it, and I need to investigate this. And that was, I guess, one of my major trigger points, that I can't believe anything I'm taught by anyone at an educational institution.
Right, and the children shall lead the way because they are not pre-programmed.
Yeah.
So then you took off on this exploration at a young age there. And when she couldn't answer you, what did you start, like, were you living in South Africa at that time?
Oh, yeah. No, uh-huh. This was in a typical South African mining town called Randfontein. I grew up on the mines. My father was a mining engineer on the gold mines and then ended up on the platinum mine, the largest platinum mine in the world.
In listening to the video, you were talking so much about mining, and I thought, wow, he's really got a pulse on that. No wonder.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm a product of the South African mining industry, it's interesting. 2 days ago, I went to my 40th high school reunion. I couldn't believe 40. I thought, no, it can't be me. It must be somebody else. it was interesting seeing all my classmates from a small, in those days, Rustenburg wasn't a very large town. It was a small, about 80,000 people. Uh-huh. Everything orientated around platinum mining and a few other mines, copper and a few other things in the area. But it was a small, well-managed, well-controlled town in the 70s. It's now a sprawling giant with just really everything is a mess. Unfortunately, under the current government, things are not well looked after and managed. Mm-hmm. But it was just fascinating to see how my classmates from a small mining town have all spread around the world. Some live in Australia, USA, UK, Canada, and
wow.
and how they, many of them, done really well. And these are all, you know, products of a little mining town.
Go ahead.
No, it's just really that many of my thoughts on what we may touch upon later, the whole Ubuntu movement and creating a whole new social structure of prosperity and abundance for all comes out of my research into ancient civilizations, the discovery of the ancient gold mining activity by the Anunnaki here. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, the countless number of ancient ruins as energy devices, the tools and artifacts. It's all connected, but in a way, my thoughts on living in a new utopian kind of society where you don't need money and where money is not necessary was in many ways formulated and formed by my growing up in a small mining town village, which was outside of Rustenburg, where everything we had was free. Everything, as long as you worked for the mine. You had a free house. Your electricity was free. Your water was free. Your garden service was free. Once you got to a certain management level, you got a free car and free petrol, and all the sporting facilities were free, and everything was free. So as long as you worked for the mine.
What an amazing life.
Exactly. And so when I talk about communities that can live for free, I come from that kind of mindset. If we all work for the same common purpose, everything can be available to us all the time because we're doing it for ourselves. All we got to do is replace the mind with the greater community that we all are a part of, and we have the same kind of structure. Just you know, but we'll come back to that later.
Okay. So I'm curious. So you were growing up in a mining town. Were they finding ruins? I mean, is that how you happened to stumble on ruins? As they were excavating,
not at all,
how did that happen?
No, the whole ruin thing came many, many, many years later. When I was in high school, I was always a bit of a rebel, I guess. Never really toed the line. Always did my own thing. Not so much that I got into serious trouble, like, you know, with the law, but just always pushing the boundaries. Mm-hmm. I was just reminded of that at my high school reunion, you know, on Saturday. And it's just amazing how people remember you, you know, which is not how I remember myself. I just remember me always being curious and wanting to see things from a different perspective. So I wasn't really into ruins at that stage. The ruins only happened in about the year 2000. Obviously, I was interested
in that recent.
No, let me qualify that. Obviously, I was interested in other ruins around the world. I'm talking about specifically the South African ruins.
Okay.
Because nothing was written about them. Keep in mind that pretty much everything you read about the ruins today comes from me. No one else.
Wow.
And this is the horrific thing right now, is that I seem to be the lone voice in South Africa talking about the significance of the South African ancient civilizations, the vanished civilizations, and the countless number of ruins, because most of our academia, not most, all of our academia in South Africa is still bent on and stuck on believing that these ruins that I'm referring to are dwellings for cattle and sheep or whatever, and built by migrating tribes,
which is
just the most insane and nonsensical conclusion to reach once you have a little bit, just some basic information about the stone structures and the stone, what we call it, the stone circles.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would think with these books that you've put out that there would be a lot of researchers flocking to South Africa. I'm surprised to hear that they're not doing that.
No, I'm the one that's now running the research program, as you may have picked up from my website. And in fact, right now, I have my second research group here. The first one came in January, and that's when we discovered the fossils. And that was just a stunning, unexpected, unbelievable breakthrough that requires quite a bit of time for us to spend on that. The significance of these mud fossils of giants and other weird creatures that we can't identify today. And many of them seem to have reptilian stroke insectoid features that we're picking up in the shape of fossils. I mean, and mythological creature body parts. This you can't make this kind of stuff up until you're faced with it in front of you. Say, okay, I can no longer wish this away. This is real. I'm holding it in my hand. Mm-hmm. What is this that I'm looking at?
Wow. I want to, when we get to that, I really want to find out how you happen to stumble on these ruins, these fossils.
Yeah. This is all a journey of discovery. This is, like I said, this is at this stage, like a 13-year journey, or 12 or 13-year journey to get to this point. But, obviously I was fascinated by the ancient civilizations around the world, obviously from the pyramids in North Africa, to the stuff in the UK and England and the ruins in Ireland, which not that many people are even aware of, the countless number of stone circles in Ireland. And then obviously Easter Island and what's going on there, and then Eastern Asia and India and China. And so I was fascinated by all that stuff.
Were you traveling to all those sites? Were you traveling around the world?
No, I was just reading and researching about them. And little did I know that I would then stumble upon the significance of the South African ruins, and expose something that's just being completely ignored right under our very noses. It's like they say, it's so you're staring right at it, but you can't see the wood for the trees. Yeah.
Because no one is like, it's a totally different paradigm. Just
But it was really in 2001 when I moved back from Cape Town to Johannesburg after being involved in the music industry. I spent most of my early years after school. I studied pharmaceutics. I went to university and studied pharmaceutics at Wits University. That's the sort of major university in South Africa, in Johannesburg. It had a very famous medical school. That's where some of your listeners may know Raymond Dart and Professor Tobias became very famous for discovering the Taung skull and the Mrs. Bliss and all the skeletons that are today held as examples of humankind, the predecessors to humanity, the mm-hmm. evolutionary steps to humanity. And that's why Wits University became famous for that. And I studied at medical school pharmaceutics. And so that's where I got my knowledge of anatomy and medicine and all that kind of stuff.
I would see also the propensity to think it with a scientific inquiry.
Yeah, exactly. And now I look back at those. In fact, we were speaking about that with our research team yesterday when we were at Adam's Calendar for the whole day, making new discoveries. There again, we're talking about the legacy and the block, actually, that the discovery of the Taung skull, the Taung child, and Mrs. Place at Sackfontein Caves, just outside Johannesburg, how that has created like a block to people thinking further and expanding their minds. This is now, like, in many ways, that's like a line in the sand and saying, well, this is, you know, here's proof of evolution, here's proof of our ancestors, pre-human ancestors, and all this kind of real, very naive kind of thinking mm-hmm. Based on lack of knowledge, lack of insight, lack of consciousness in many ways as well by these academics. And, you know, God bless them for what they did. But in many ways, they've done us all a great disservice.
Well, so how did the penny drop for you? You're in South Africa and you've been growing up in this land and you weren't aware of the ruins. And then, so how did this come into your awareness? How did you get that aha and recognize what you were seeing?
Well, obviously, I was aware of the Zimbabwe ruins. I wasn't aware of the Zimbabwe ruins and their connection to the pyramids of Giza. That's what I discovered myself much later. But by 2001, I started getting very frustrated with the literature, with the books out there that weren't, for me, weren't connecting the dots. There seemed to have been a book that was missing. Mm-hmm. About humankind and our origins and how we were created as slaves for these beings and how the gold mines were our slave camps and so forth, and connecting it to the rise of the religions around the world and the control through religion and so forth, and how science and our knowledge of genetics fits in there. So by 2004, I decided that I've got to write a book about this, because I'm not finding the right book that pulls all these, you know, connects all these dots. And that's why I sat down and I started writing Slave Species of God.
So that was the first book.
That was my first book, yeah, Slave uh-huh. Species of God. That was then re-released by Bear & Co. in Vermont mm-hmm. as Slave Species of the Gods.
I just want to let all our listeners know that the books that he's referring to, they are on his page. So, you know, you don't have to grab a piece of paper right now and write it down. If you want those books, you just go to his page and you'll find the books there. Go ahead, please.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, if people want to find out more information, just go to my website, michaeltellinger.com. But I compliment you on putting together a beautiful page for today's discussion. MichaelTellinger.com is my website, and you can find a lot more information. Plus, also, while we're talking about it, all the different tours and research packages that I put together for different groups, for people with different intentions or different interests. And this is, it's really, Kenthea, it's becoming such an interesting subject that is just growing and growing in so many different aspects of information and knowledge. You think, oh, you're dealing with some ruins. And unfortunately, mm-hmm. Well, fortunately for us, the moment you open your eyes, your mind, you step outside of the box that of information that our academia has all shoved us in, you realize that these, in many ways, the discovery of the stone circles for me was an eye-opener on the deeper understanding of the mysteries of the laws of nature, sound, resonance, frequency, how that is the source of all things, how that connects us to all ancient civilizations, their knowledge of or thoughts and beliefs of creation. And it's just such a beautiful weaving story that suddenly allows you to explain and comprehend pretty much everything in creation. Many of the ancient events that are described, and a deeper sense of creation, of God, of the Creator, mm-hmm. of our interconnectedness, mm-hmm. you know, the whole thing of spirituality, mm-hmm. and how spirituality meets science. All of this is connected to my discovering of the stone circles and a 13-year period of uncovering and peeling away page after page of deception and ignorance to reach the stage that is just an absolutely beautiful, I guess, comfortable phase or a place to be where things are much easier to comprehend. No matter what I look at or what I'm presented with, the stone ruins of Southern Africa were a catalyst for a deeper understanding to all of it. It's really mm-hmm. weird.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm wondering, you're such a rich resource of these different disciplines integrating and intersecting. And I see here on the first image you have your tour group. So I'm wondering, so when people come and they take a tour, they're taking a tour with you, are you sharing with them this multi-layered experience of the area? You want to share a little bit about these tour groups that you're doing?
Absolutely. And then we do different tours. You know, we call them, it started off by doing, you know, just ancient ruins of Southern Africa. And then I met my dear friend, Dean Laprini, who's a shaman extraordinaire. He's really the custodian of the many of the sacred sites throughout all of Southern Africa that have been neglected by our governments, and his Sacred Sites Foundation is taking a very strong role to protect and honor and maintain these sites through their custodians, the traditional people. Many of them are Bushmen or Khoisan elders that have also been marginalized by our governments and so forth. And so
what
between
a
Dean and
experience.
Myself. Yeah, and so, you know, Dean's speciality is around the Cape and the Khoisan and Cape Town. When I say the Cape, that means Cape Town, the Cape Province, and the Eastern Cape in South Africa, and then also in Namibia and Botswana, Tsadilo Hills. My focus was on the ruins, which cover large parts of South Africa, Botswana, and Zimbabwe, including the Great Zimbabwe Ruins. Mm-hmm. So when Dean and I combine, it is a real rich tapestry of deep shamanic spiritual grounding into the spirit of Africa, the spirit of the ancestors, and the spirit of the animals, and all of those beautiful shamanic.
Oh, what an amazing experience. As an artist, I'd love to go.
People that don't know Dean come on these tours and they just leave absolutely adoring and loving him, you know.
Oh, so, wow.
I come in with my research on the stone ruins, the stone circles, the science and technology connected to our spirituality and all that. So and we travel from within the borders of South Africa. We start crossing over into Swaziland, where, for example, we have officially the oldest mine in the world. It's more than 100,000 years old. And, you know, we can go there. In fact, we probably go in there tomorrow with our research group. We just jump in the car, we drive, we cross the border. It's very painless. Mm-hmm. And we go and see the Ingwenya mine and the Lion Cavern, which is officially dated by mainstream archaeology to 43,000 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
but Peter Beaumont, the South African archaeologist that found it in I think it was late 60s or early 70s. I can't remember exactly the year. Peter Beaumont, in many of the interviews that he did in those days with, you know, National Geographic and all the major magazines around the world about his major discovery, he very openly stated in his interviews that he believes the mind is more than 100,000 years old. But the official dating was set at 43,000 years.
Oh, my goodness. See, yeah, I'm totally convinced that there have been multiple civilizations throughout time on this planet Earth. It's not just our current one, not at all, no.
Yeah,
and I'm so curious, when you're going with Dean, has he, like, surprised you with the way of his experience of the ruins? Has he, like, revealed to you things that you weren't expecting, or...
Of course, you know, we get when you're dealing with shamans and people that are deeply connected to the spiritual and that can talk to the spirits and talk to the ancestors, you experience some very unique and unique situations where, you know, suddenly you would arrive at an ancient site and suddenly they start having a discussion with the custodians, with the guardians of these sites. Mm-hmm. And so we download a lot of information in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's people that don't know anything about this place, and they start giving you information that they're downloading from talking to the guardians and the custodians of these sites, mm-hmm. and, you know, the spiritual custodians, and mm-hmm. they give you information that you've known, and you wonder how they knew about it because you never shared it with anybody.
So, well, because they're tapping into the source.
Yeah, exactly. They're tapping into the collective consciousness, the source, mm-hmm. and the information about what really happened there. So you're quite right. There were multiple civilizations. There were many layers that we often forget. So even when I talk about the stone ruins and the stone circles of South Africa and Southern Africa, because it covers many borders, mm-hmm. It's not just one group of people. It's not just the Anunnaki. We're dealing with many other beings. That have been here for extended periods of time, even before the Anunnaki and so forth. And this is why it is such a complex subject. And anyone who claims or believes that they know how it all happened or they've got it all figured out is either incredibly arrogant or just delusional. Just all we know, every day I find that what I held dear, what I believed yesterday, might be shattered today by my new discoveries.
I'm totally on board with you on that. We have to be willing to break apart what we think moment by moment to invite the new, the refresh.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're going to be going on to our half hour break in just a few seconds. So I don't want to delve deep into something, but I want to really encourage everyone to check out the page, check out his tours, check out the video that I put down in my items of Michael's talk at this energy conference. It will blow your mind. I'm telling you, it's amazing.
Well, I think you keep talking about my presentation at the energy conference, and people might ask, well, why is a guy that talks about ancient civilizations at an energy conference?
Yeah.
Very importantly, because most of the ancient sites that we have been discovering are all energy generating devices. Mm-hmm. They are not places for offering and worshiping and kissing, but they are energy generating devices. And we need to get into the deep science of that, because once people see that, it changes your entire perspective on what was going on our planet a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, we can certainly pick that up on the other side of break. So I want to let everyone know that you are listening to The Other Side of Midnight. Our guest tonight is Michael Tellinger, and we're talking about the amazing ruins in South Africa, and we will catch you on the other side of the break.
You're listening to the first hour of The Other Side of Midnight. Be sure to catch our complete live show every Saturday and Sunday night at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern, for a full 3 hours of this kind of exploration. And be sure to visit theothersideofmidnight.com as you listen so you can follow our special Radio with Pictures guest page simultaneously. The Kinthea, our hardworking producer, specifically prepares to illustrate the topics discussed each show. Why? Because there is vital additional information on that Radio with Pictures guest page that I assure you will immeasurably enhance your understanding and enjoyment of what our guests are describing. I mean, would you rather listen to a guest talk about NASA images of ancient artifacts on Mars or simultaneously be able to follow the official NASA images showing you, as you're listening, the ruins? If you'd like to listen at your convenience to all our shows, including our unique Radio with Pictures feature, please visit theothersideofmidnight.com and click on the Join Club 19.5 link in the left-hand column. Okay, what do you get with your Club 19.5 membership, besides helping the show literally stay on the air? Well, first of all, you will exclusively, this is not available to the general public, enjoy our enhanced ad-free podcast, courtesy of Chris Bell, automatically downloading all the latest The Other Side of Midnight shows directly to your favorite podcast device so you can listen when you want to. Further, as a full Club 19.5 member, you will gain exclusive access to our The Other Side of Midnight 24/7 chat server, what I can't help calling the Open Hailing Frequencies Room, which is available only to members 24/7. Now, during the show, that's where you will find other 19.5 members and sometimes even members of the bridge crew, my guests, and even me when I have time. Regardless, you can always relay live questions to me during the show just by going to the Open Hailing Frequencies Room. Of course, when we're not on the air with your 19.5 membership, you can visit our Club 19.5 radio archives anytime and download all our shows directly to your computer, which will automatically provide you a screen size that allows you to really examine the remarkable images Kinthea posts for each show. Okay, here's where I need to get kind of super serious. Club 19.5 is how our show is currently solely supported. In my hopefully not vain attempt to keep commercials to a minimum, if you're concerned about keeping us on the air, if you want to hear information that has been vetted far more than perhaps any other show, the best way to ensure that is to join Club 19.5 and get your friends and family to join too. And if you don't know already, when I drop by Open Hailing Frequencies, you can even ask me directly what the ultimate meaning is behind 19.5, literally the most exclusive club in the world. Please join me and my interesting guests on this very stream every Saturday and Sunday night at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern, and be sure to come back and listen to our live 3-hour shows. Thanks for listening, and now, back to the show.
And welcome back to The Other Side of Midnight. This is Kinthea filling in for Richard C. Hoagland. And our show tonight is the Zimbabwe Ruins at 19.5, connecting the dots from our stunning ancient past to the insane modern world we have created. And our guest tonight is Michael Tillinger. Michael, welcome back.
Thank you. I'm right here.
Good. This is like a maiden voyage for me. No, not really. So we were talking about energy and these devices and how it's going to just shake up the world when they realize what these devices are and how they fit in with energy. And since I had the privilege of watching that video, I'm not going to give anything away. I'm going to let you tell the story, dear.
Yeah, so I think just to connect the dots a little bit further, I first discovered the stone ruins or heard about the stone ruins in South Africa, other than Great Zimbabwe. Great Zimbabwe are famous already from the 1800s, and much has been written about them and spoken about them and so forth. But obviously during Zimbabwe's turbulent times, the tourism dropped there, but that's back to normal now, and it's actually great going to Zimbabwe because the people are just so beautiful and friendly and loving. But Great Zimbabwe ruins, little did I know that they are actually part of the rest of the stone circles and the ancient ruins of Southern Africa. This is all one giant empire created at the stage, it seems, by the Anunnaki from the research. Much of it actually is referred to by Zachariah Sitchin in his work and the translations. He refers to in some of his translations to places that he did not even know existed. And Adam's Calendar is one such a place.
So that, by the way, everyone, Adam's Calendar is number 2 in Michael's items.
Yeah. The group, the number 1, the tour group, is actually standing right in front of Adam's Calendar. The two calendar stones are the two central stones, like two vibrating plates at the center. And then you have a closer look at them, which this picture was taken yesterday, actually, when we were there for the sunset yesterday with my tour group, with my research team.
And why is it called Calendar Stone?
Well, that's why I placed that picture there, so you can see the shadow cast on that stone. And that shadow is really an indication of the passage of the year. That shadow, you can see the stones are slightly leaning to one side towards the edge of the cliff. And just excuse the barking in the background. My dog's out, obviously being irritated by something. You see the shadow being cast. So that's why it's a calendar stone. It's probably the best example of a working sun calendar of that size. That is probably way more than 100,000. In fact, I believe it's close to 300,000 years old. We can talk about the dating techniques and why I think so. I'm not just sucking that out of my thumb. There are a lot of reasons, not just one reason, many reasons why I say that. And connected to the origins of humankind. But built into it is the mechanism to actually tell the passage of time on this planet of ours. And so that shadow that you see on image number 2, Adam's Calendar shadow, that shadow moves from the left edge of that stone, which is the summer solstice, and then it starts to move to the right as the sun moves, as it sets. So the shadow is cast by the setting sun, and then the shadow moves from the left edge right across to the right edge until it sets on the winter solstice, and then it starts to move back again. So you can tell every day of the year by where that shadow is at the sunset.
Sunset time is when when you mark the hour, the day. Yeah.
It's still a working calendar. It's probably not as accurate as it should be, but it's there. You can still use it if you wanted to.
So are you using the alignments that this has to help date it to this, you know, hundreds of thousands of years ago, is because you're saying that the alignments would have been such and such at such and such a time, and because you say it's not accurate now, is that how you're dating? Yeah.
Yes and no. It's just difficult because the alignments, the thing has moved, it's shifted, so we don't really know to what it may have been aligned originally.
You mean the Earth shifted, so it shifted as well?
Well, this is the thing. We don't know. I don't know why it's not aligned. What happened? But what we do know is that the calendar. What we do know is the ancients did not make mistakes. They didn't accidentally build this very elaborate machine, and I need to stress again, this is a machine, and we'll talk about the scientific electronic measurements, why I can say it with such confidence.
And it's carved like that. It's the natural rock, it's carved, because I see an angle there.
Yes. So the one side of it is natural, mm-hmm. and this the side that you see carved, that's the winter solstice sunset. So it seems to me that it was the stones, the calendar stones, which are at the center of the circular site. The whole original site is a circle of standing stones, a little bit like Stonehenge, but not that big. The stones aren't that big, but far more impressive and powerful once you see their age and what they actually do, mm-hmm. From the electronic side and the amount of energy that they generate.
That's really awesome. I'm listening to you talk about energy emitted from the stone. I mean, nobody talks about that. I want to hear more about that.
Oh, yeah. This is the thing. This is why our education system is just so messed up. We don't get taught anything of importance and consequence. You know, our entire education system is structured to turn us, as you know by now, we all should know, and I need to bring it up. This is why we such, you know, ignorant beings, of like a species with amnesia and with no knowledge of anything, like babies being lied to and manipulated, lambs to the slaughter. And pretty much all we do throughout our entire lives is, you know, work, earn money, pay taxes, and die. You know, surely that can't be the meaning of life. So anyone that rises into any higher levels of consciousness or enlightenment will realize that we need to break out of that system. And this is why the knowledge of the ancient civilizations, what happened, how and when this enslavement of humanity took place, and perpetually and consistently and methodically over thousands of years kept us enslaved and dumped down at various moments, kept pushing us back and re-dumbing us down so we don't rise above our own pay grade as a species. Mm-hmm. And it's just beautiful to see once the pennies fall into place and mm-hmm. you start seeing it.
Well, you know, you say something there that I'm still wrapping my head around it, which I don't know that I totally. So we're talking about, and Richard would, I'm sure, agree with, you know, about being dumbed down. But I often think about, like, is it some external force that's dumbing us down, or is it the physics of where we are moving in the solar system and how the planets are moving? You know, because you look at the yugas and how there are these cycles of energy. And so are we in a stream of consciousness that flows down and then it flows up and it flows like the in and out breath of God? So I really have a hard time letting go of the reality that each person has within them that core to be their own sovereign. I have a hard time embracing that somebody else is going to control me unless I relinquish my control and live by default. But if I live more consciously, I think we can be more free.
Well, you know, those are beautiful spiritually minded words and higher knowledge and enlightened consciousness kind of statements. Unfortunately, just 100 years ago and 150 years ago, there were still farmers that had slaves that they beat and sometimes beat to death.
Yes.
They had absolute control over those people. And as conscious or as spiritual as those people may have been, they woke up one morning and the farmer came in a bad mood and just beat them to death and nothing happened. So, and that's what we're talking about here. Mm. I call it the terrible truth. And until we face the terrible truth, we're not going to get past it. That's it. It's, you know, a psychological thing. You have to embrace the truth. And once you know the truth and that you're okay with it, then can you move past that trauma? And
I believe that's the living by default. I think that was the living by default. This is a time when we are like waking up.
Yeah, but are we still dealing with this, the physics and the density and the dimensions of this reality we find ourselves mm-hmm. in? Mm-hmm. Yeah, at this this is it, you know. People wake up around me in my little town every morning and they wonder how they're going to feed their children. That's their reality. That's what it is. And you can be as spiritual to them with them as you want. It's not going to help them. They're going to look at you and they're going to nod, say yes, yes, yes. And when you leave, they're going to carry on wondering about how they're going to feed their children. And if they can't find a job, they're going to go break in somewhere so they can steal some money so they can go and buy some bread.
Yes.
So these are the realities, and we can't wish those away through, you know, becoming all spiritual and high and mighty and thinking that our thoughts are going to solve the problems. Yes, our thoughts can solve the problems, but we also need to act. Our physical acts combined with our thoughts are far more powerful.
Oh, I totally agree there. I don't think that we're just supposed to think about, contemplate our navels. That won't do anything. We have to act on it for sure.
And the same frustrated physical enslavement that most of humanity is trapped in today through the socioeconomic financial systems that have been evolved meticulously over thousands of years. And again, that's where my research into the origins of money comes in, and that resulted in the launch of the Ubuntu movement that provides solutions for the current socioeconomic systems. Very, very simply changes the system. Like Buckminster Fuller says, you don't change a system by fighting it. You change a system by creating an alternative that makes the existing one obsolete. And it's incredible when you start thinking of it like that, how simple it actually is. But we'll talk about that later. But what I'm really doing is showing you how everything is connected. And the moment people start dividing and separating things on any kind of level, from science, spirituality, history, archaeology, the moment anyone starts to separate things into little compartments, they've gone, they lost, because then they lose the connectedness of all things.
I'm totally in agreement with that. Totally.
Yeah.
It's like trying to fence the sky, for goodness sakes.
Yeah.
So
the reason why you and I can have this conversation right now is because we've reached a certain level of consciousness and enlightenment, and we've got inquiring minds, and the technology that's been developed for us by those that are trying to enslave us, we're actually using as tools of liberation. Now, isn't that a beautiful twist in the tale?
Well, okay, so here's my other question to you. Maybe it's not that those tools were to enslave us. Maybe it was like you don't give your car keys to your four-year-old until you know your four-year-old can drive a car, you know? Maybe we were not given those keys because we were still very unconscious and we would do terrible damage to ourselves and everyone else.
Yeah, now I think I know where you're going with that, and I would agree with it to a certain extent. However, we still have to deal with the physical realities of the past and the events that at one stage we were bred as cattle for food. You know, and there's no denying that. And
This is
really important. Now, the moment we start talking about the Anunnaki and the history of our planet, we have to bring in the incredible work and research and translations of Anton Parks. Now, unquestionably, Anton Parks is the world's leading authority on Sumerian texts, on Sumerian translations, way beyond anything that Zachariah Sitchin may have done. Zachariah Sitchin really laid the foundation for us and in many ways misinterpreted things, but he opened the door for us to think and to open our minds and hearts and eyes and embrace what I call the terrible truth of the slave species being created to be slaves in the gold mines by an ignorant or lower consciousness beings. And just because the Anunnaki had the knowledge of genetic cloning and higher technology didn't make them conscious. Or didn't make them higher enlightened beings. They were just abusing their knowledge of technology and traveling through the cosmos. The other discussion we need to have is, what is the cosmos? What is actually out there in space? Because I no longer believe what I've been told by NASA. And these are very important considerations on every possible level. We have to question what we've been told by our authorities.
I'm curious when you say about space and you don't believe what NASA has told us, are you referring to anomalies on other planets? Or are you referring to the structure of the galaxies and systems? Can you share a little more?
Pretty much all of it. I think many of your listeners will know that NASA Hollywood plays a very important role in hiding real information in plain sight. You know, they hide it in plain sight in the blockbuster movies, busting the block of our unconsciousness.
Well, actually, Richard would chime in here, and he would say that that was deliberate from the Brookings report, that they were NASA, when it was first launched, you know, got this Brookings Institute to do a study. And, you know, they asked if you found evidence of life off of Earth, what should you do? And they said, you should keep it quiet until you educate the public through the media. So, you know, it looks like the media, the movies have been seeded with these ideas to get us to acclimate to the ideas, to embrace this reality that we are not alone in this universe.
Yeah. Look, I don't think any sober-minded person thinks that we're alone. So I like to move beyond that. You know, if we're going to get stuck on contemplating whether we're alone, then we're actually debating in the dark ages. Yeah. So I don't even want to talk about that. We just assume that we're not alone, and there's an infinite amount of life out there, mm-hmm. because creation is infinite, and the brilliance of the creator and the creation process is an infinite process, and we ourselves are products of that creation. So therefore, we are creators ourselves, and our first instincts as little children from the moment we are born is to create. Isn't that our first human instinct, and our human nature is to create? And so this is what I often get, you know, into discussion with people about human nature is to be nasty and horrible and violent. I go, no, that's a byproduct of your social structure and your where you're brought up and the society that you brought up in and the subconscious scars that you carry mm-hmm. from either the family or the community or wherever you grow up in. And you might have some genetic traits, obviously, as well, that cause certain behavioral patterns, but overall, what we want to do as human beings is to create and be creative and give expression to our creative talents. And the moment we are prevented from doing that, that's when that antisocial behavior kicks in.
Right.
And we start behaving badly and doing things that we normally wouldn't do because we are frustrated spirits and souls trapped in this meat sack with a skeletal frame, wondering why we can't express our creative talents.
I remember there was a Star Trek program where they called us bags of water.
Yeah. Yeah. And wondering who are these people telling me what I can and cannot do.
Right. Right.
And that applies to what you and I are doing here right now, you know, talking about things that we've researched and we've found and discovered. And yet there's still some people today that will try and tell you what you can and cannot research. I find that quite startling.
Yeah, because they're...
And they get upset. And they get upset when you bring up certain topics. Like certain topics are just like no-go zones, no-go areas.
Because it threatens their stability.
Oh, absolutely.
It's everything.
Yeah.
They've been pinning their house of cards.
Yeah.
The reality is they've been constructing on sand instead of rock.
Well, it's not only that. I mean, some of the areas of research that have been out there for quite a while, some longer than others, have become guarded fiercely and violently by the current system. And I don't even want to go there. Don't even want to mention the words, because the moment you mention them, people's entire psyche changes.
Yeah.
Just by mentioning it.
Yep.
And so I just want to, you know, let your listeners keep their eyes and their hearts and their minds open, saying, you know, please don't do that. Allow people to research everything and anything. Because if you told me 20 years ago or 30 years ago that I'd be talking about, you know, walking through ancient sites that were not built as dwellings for people or cows, that they were energy generating devices, and that the temples in Egypt were not temples for gods or whatever, they were energy generating devices, and that we are downloading information from guardians and gatekeepers and custodians of these ancient sites, I might not have been very comfortable with that.
I think most of the world is in that place, that they're not comfortable with it. I mean, we're like the tip of the rocket ship, exploring. We're opening the path.
So one of the, you know, just we're jumping around quite a bit. I want to come back to the stone ruins and the energy devices and the evidence, the science and the evidence behind it. That's really important because whenever I do my lectures and presentations, and I'll invite people to go onto YouTube, just put my name in and watch any of the latest presentations, especially the one from Sedona in 2017. The new one from 2018 will be up soon. It just goes a little bit further. But you know, I deal with the energy, the ancient civilizations, the technology they had, their knowledge of sound, resonance, and frequency, how to use sound, resonance, and frequency as a tool by which they could cut mountaintops and move them, by which they could do anything they wanted, which to us would seem absolutely unimaginable. And yet, when you have that technology, it's just a piece of cake. It's like you can do anything you set your mind on. Pretty much. And once you have this information, it shifts your perspective on pretty much everything else as well.
It's startling, startling.
It's just the knowledge that we have, the information. And mm-hmm. when you have discussions with other people and other researchers and especially mainstream academia whose information and their knowledge and the education is that of compartmentalized information. So they only know about geology or they only know about there's only astronomy and only archaeology and only electronics. And if you try and bring it all together for them, they can't because they just don't know enough.
Right.
And therein lies the problem. So this is why it's so important to in this work that I do specifically is to keep an absolutely open mind and learn as much as I can about geology, about archaeology, about astronomy, about electrical currents, about magnetism, about mm-hmm. electronics, about frequency, vibration, about the zero point, about toroidal fields, about ancient tribes and the tools and artifacts that they may have used and so forth. And
a Renaissance and man.
and only then can you start recognizing things when you find them because you can place it somewhere that will be relevant. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a very exciting time right now to be studying this because it is bringing us very rapidly to a deeper unraveling of what I call the terrible truth of humanity's abuse over thousands of years. And I'd like to bring Anton Parks and his research into this again as we go right. Because it's critical. And if your listeners aren't aware of who he is, then this is the time to sit up, pay attention, and
right.
get into Anton Parks as quickly as you can. Because if you don't, you're missing 90% of what is going on in the Sumerian texts.
Well, we can pick that part up on the other side of the break. We'll be going to the break. I want to let the listeners know that I will post on the page your Sedona 2017 presentation, and if you want to give me some links on Parks, I'll put those up as well.
Yeah.
I also want to express to you, Michael, how much I am appreciating your blend of the different disciplines. I think that is so pivotal in making any kind of change or understanding of where we're going. It would be, you know, to have only one sense, it's like looking out through 3 inches of space and you're ignoring all the rest of, you know, this huge universe. So this hunger you have, this excitement, this enthusiasm is really wonderful. So I want to let everyone know you're listening to The Other Side of Midnight.com. And the Zimbabwe Ruins at 19.5, connecting the dots from our stunning ancient past to the insane modern world we have created. And we have Michael Tillinger, and we'll pick him up on the other side of the break.
Thank you.
talk to you in the audience around the planet tonight. I want to talk to you about the kind of meta objectives of the Enterprise mission and The Other Side of Midnight, this radio show that you're listening to right now. As you know, we have sponsored a number of important research projects through this show over the last couple, 3 years. We've raised money for electrogravitics, for M-Drive research. We're looking very hard now at this whole orgone accumulator technology, and I want to use the Accutron, this inertial sensor, which I developed following the lead of Bruce De Palma many, many decades ago, to put the Accutron in an orgone situation, in the accumulator or in an orgone blanket, these multi-layered concoctions that somehow seem to trap or densify the ether. And yes, ether is real. There is a physics of the ether. And the problem is that it all costs money. It all costs funds. So we've added a new wrinkle to the Other Side of Midnight website. Over on the left-hand side, if you go to theothersideofmidnight.com and just look over on the left, you'll see under the banners which say things like home, tonight show, there's a donate button. And there's also some donate buttons in the middle of the page if you happen to get the right show, but mainly over on the left, it says donate now. Normally, I don't like asking folks for money, but money is energy. Money is the ability in this culture to do things, to accomplish things. There is a huge need and necessity for a game changer. We need to bring humanity back together to realize its commonality and not its differences. And that's in part what this show is trying to do with a variety of programs. And part of our research effort is trying to do with a variety of projects there. So if you have some spare change, if you have more than spare change, go to that button. Go to the left-hand Donate Now button and click on it and send us what you can spare, because communication in the 21st century costs. Everything costs, but communication more than anything costs, because you have transmitters and internet connections and bright people and complexity of computers. Oh my God, complexity of computers. It all ultimately has to be paid for somehow. And as you know, you can also join Club 19.5. That's an easy way to support the show, because then you get archives, you get seminars, you get this thing we're going to be doing in the next few weeks on how to look at these images. And there are ways you can look that will give you insights to what you're seeing that will not be found on NBC or CBS or ABC. So again, go to the left-hand side of tonight's show page or the guest page, click on the donate button and send us what you can spare, because believe me, every dollar helps. Thanks for listening to this exciting first hour. Now, the second and third hour of the show is available to Club 19.5 members only. Please support the show by subscribing to Club 19.5 and join our very interesting community. To do that, please visit the website, theothersideofmidnight.com, and click on the Join Club 19.5 link in the left-hand column. As a Club 19.5 member, you'll gain access to the rest of this show and all previous 350-plus shows that we have done. Now, recent Club 19.5 member archive recording have the commercials removed, and the sound quality has been enhanced. You'll also receive a dedicated private podcast feed that contains these enhanced show recordings. And you'll be able to download the MP3 files directly from the archive if you prefer. As a Club 19.5 member, you'll have access to a private chat server that members use to chat about the show during the show, and you will have a direct channel to post a question that will be read on the air to the guest. And you'll have a place to post questions during our open hailing frequencies. We realize that not everyone wants to call in live, and this gives you an easy way to participate in a live show without having to participate. Club 19.5 members can use this private chat to talk about the shows, ask questions, suggest new guests, and I may even pop on from time to time to answer specific questions. Also, the entire Bridge crew is in these participating chat channels, so you can interact with them as well. You'll also be the first to preview our new videos and reports. We'll be adding exclusive new features to Club 19.5 as we go forward, and boy, have we got some amazing things to tell you about in the coming weeks. So please support the show and don't miss all the exciting new things we have planned. I want to thank all our Club 19.5 members because without your guys' support, this show would not be on the air. Please help us continue growing the show by subscribing to Club 19.5 today. And when I say we really need you, we really need you. Over and out.